Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hello and welcome to episode 106 of What Most People Think. And as you can see, the theme tune is still the same. I went down that road, I thought about changing it, and then it turns out people really like the theme tune as it sounds now. So let's just bench that, particularly as the government seems to be shaping up. I don't know, there's some talk of an October lockdown, a Locktober, you've got to give it a shit name for these things, Movember, Mopdown. Knobdown. Anyway, welcome to the show. There are quite a few new listeners I can see from the numbers. Welcome to What Most People Think. A lot of that I'd imagine would have come from being on Rob Beckett and Josh Widdicombe's brilliant lockdown Parent in Hell. And what a huge show that is. I mean, we are now at the point where there's certain podcast shows that bring more new followers and listeners than TV shows, right? And it was great fun speaking to them. If you are, like, there were one or two more. I just fucking stubbed my toe on something. I was going to try and style that out, but it really hurt. Has anyone ever explained why the pain of a stubbed toe is as elevated as it is? There's absolutely no fucking correlation whatsoever between the experience. I mean, they say that the body's pain receptors are there to send a warning to the brain about danger. I would argue that the pain of just slightly curling your toe back doesn't really correlate with the damage done. I've always thought of my toes as like massive drama queens. Do you know what I mean? Like, the moment you stub them, they're like, quick, oh my God, quick, get me to an A&E now. And then 2 minutes later, they're like, actually, I think it's fine. I think I might have overreacted. But yeah, there were one or two serious subjects discussed in the little emotion cough from the man there in that episode regarding miscarriage and stillbirth. Or the usual listeners now, the really blokey listeners are going, oh, fuck it, here we go. He's going to spill his guts again. But if you do want to follow that up, if there are people that you think would benefit from hearing a bloke talk about those sort of things, you can also listen to the Griefcast I did with Carrie Ad Lloyd, which goes into that in a bit more detail. Now I just have actually got basically a bit of shreddies stuck at the back of my throat. That's a nice image for you. In a nutshell, this podcast, I don't know how many you've listened back to, it's called What Most People Think. And I am a comic coming at things from the usual political angle of most comics, but as much as anything these days, it's about the social angle. And I'm just trying to get to the heart of what I think that most... What's a reasonable middle ground take in this country? What are normal people thinking about social and political issues of the day? I also made my return to Late Night MASH, where the artist formerly known as the MASH Report. And look, there's a show that everybody agrees on. So let's just say that everybody loved it and had no issues with it whatsoever. But it was good to be back there, sitting there. I must say that they're recording it now in Elstree. And they recorded it in central London for the first two series and they're now in Pinewood. And the audience were good to me, but my jokes had to be really good to get a response. Elstree, though, love a bit of Elstree. They're a bit rough and ready, like, go on, oi, oi. I mean, if you've seen Elstree, Boreham Wood, no offence if you live there. Some offence if you live there. It's a bit of a shithole. Jonathan Pye as well was on the show, a.k.a. Jonathan Pye, aka Tom Walker. And some of you, and Jonathan was, Tom was great. Kaiser Soze was great. Kevin Spacey was great. I'm not implying anything there. But some of you, I had a couple of messages. We're getting quite a few moany messages now. We had some about the cuss count recently. Some of you are moaning that I have too many left-wing comics on. Look, what you've got to understand is that I want to speak to interesting people. I want to speak to comics who have an eye on politics. But you also have to understand that on the kind of non-woke or right-wing comedian side, there just aren't that many of us. That's the problem. And you'll see that I've had the people that are that way inclined on regularly. So people like Simon Evans, Constantine Kissin, Leo Kurse, Andrew Doyle have all made numerous appearances. They actually come back as co-hosts. But there is just a numbers issue, you know? And what I try to do is I try to get on lefties that are open to discussion. You know, try to avoid perhaps the more morally certain ones where I can. So Patreon. So we had this thing where the Patreon ran their payment recently, and it's been an issue for a while, is you just get a lot of cancelled accounts. Now, I've had a couple of messages that I don't know if anybody pays by PayPal, but that seems to be one of the key culprits. So if you are a patron and you wish to continue being a patron, just give your account a little check there and make sure that you've still got your subscription live, because there was a lot of cancelled account. Maybe everyone's just fucking gone off here and gone, yeah, I've had enough of that. Fair enough. Not fair enough. That'd be very hurtful. But the point of the Patreon is to keep the podcast weekly and ad-free. Right now, I know a lot of podcasts have adverts. I totally get that. I've just chose to go another way, in the same way that my comedy goes another way. I think it's quite good brand synergy, the risk of sounding like a complete twat. But there are benefits. You get once a month, you get a Patreon-only podcast. You can see my previous two tour shows, the whole of them, videoed, professional standard. Does anybody say that anymore? Videoed to a professional standard. That just made me sound like a bloke from the 90s there that used to film weddings. Do you remember those blokes? Does that even still happen? They do that cheesy fucking graphics. The slow-mo on the bride that always looked a bit creepy, like the bit in Love Actually. But yeah, there's loads of stuff there. There's my Comedy Unleashed set, the last two tours. There'll be online gigs. I know we did a few of those during lockdown, but I suspect they will be coming back in winter. In fact, they will be coming back in winter, I'm telling you now. And there will be soon the chance to be involved in making a radio program. So if you want to be part of the Patreon community, go to patreon.com and just search my name, and you can choose which tier makes sense to you. On that note, welcome in a few patrons to the show. We've got Paul Haig. Paul Haig, I don't know why, but that just sounds like would make for a good football chant, you know? Paul Haig, there's only one Paul Haig. He sounds like a centre-back for Chelsea in the early 90s. Do you remember that team? They had Graham Roberts, people like that. Dave Mitchell, fucking hell, pulled that name out of the bag. We've got Simon Alexander Collier. Simon Alexander Collier sounds like an unpublished poet. We got Alan Bright. Did you marry a woman whose surname was Side? Because then, see where I'm going this? Then you'd be Mr. Brightside. I mean, that would be one for the wedding, wouldn't it? So, I mean, like that song doesn't bang hard enough at weddings anyway. I'm Mr. Brightside, fucking literally. Although I don't agree with double-barreled names, but that's a subject for another week. Stuart Nelson. I mean, that is just a rock-solid 80s guy name, isn't it? Stuart Nelson, driving his Ford Capri with his missus. What would his missus be called? Becky, no offence to any Beckys there. Becky's a nice enough name. Becky's actually stuck about, hasn't it? I'd like to know the stats on that. We talk a lot about names on this show and what they indicate and their durability over time. I think Becky is a pretty solid name. Moira, on the other hand. Maureen, they haven't really stood the test of time. David Shambrook. Shambrooks. I mean, I don't know if you're a solicitor, David, but your very name sounds like you should be a solicitor. Maybe you're in business with Stuart Nelson, Shambrook and Nelson. They still have those receptionists, those ladies that speak in a way, Shambrook and Nelson. I would have loved one of those jobs, just once in my life. Just a repeatable job where you just sit there, do the same shit every day. Anyway, here's my weekly podcast. So the cuss count, if you're new to the show, we have a thing called a cuss count whereby we track the curve of swearing. It started off during the period where we would be updated by the government on COVID numbers, hospitalizations and stuff. So we decided to do that with swearing, to track the curve of swearing, because as we all know, it is big and it is clever. So last week we had, it was 0.56 swears a minute, which for a guest episode is about bang on. Tom Walker managed 21 swears. So the esteemed David Domain, who compiles these for me, he's like a sort of cricket scorer. He says that he's third in the rankings now. So Tom is challenging Romesh Ranganathan. So basically the cuss count is kind of like a star in a reasonably priced car. But you get, at the end of it, at some point I'll award a prize for swearing. And Romesh Ranganathan He's currently top. We're on the lookout for exotic swears. This wasn't a swear as such, but David Domain drew attention to the use of the phrase anal fissure. Anal fissure. I mean, that sounds like a... I mean, it's fissure is spelled F-I-S-S-U-R-E. So if you spot any, you're free and welcome to come back to me on anything the show. You just email whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. So the way that the show works is I either have guests on or have returning guests doing co-hosting, or I do solo shows if all the other potential guests have told me to fuck off. Because not everyone will appear on this show, let's put it that way. So this will be a solo show and I'm going to speak to you because I think there's some stuff that we need to catch up on. We obviously had the Tory national insurance rise, which is quite a big development. Then I don't know if you heard about this, but there was a Middlesbrough footballer that got in trouble for a tweet that he sent when he was 14. Yes, I know. I can hear the core audience for this going, oh, fucking, it's ridiculous. You can't say anything these days from when you was a kid in the past, historically. And then we're going to do a bit of mental health chat, not just because people are here from the lockdown parenting hell thing, but there's a couple of things that are worth going over that are currently happening with my good self. You're kind of like, what's going on, Jeff? You transitioning? No, but I will speak to you about that towards the end of the show. We always do a thank you and a fuck you, a simple act of gratitude and retribution. So thank you for the MASH feedback. I mean, look, let's just get this clear. When that show goes out, it has a core audience of very lefty woke types that tweet about it, and they basically want to encourage more of the stuff that they like and less of the stuff that they don't. So I tend to get a fair bit of stick. If I come out of that 50-50, I'm probably doing all right. But what I did get was quite a few people who were left-wing, who would normally hate me, going, oh, I actually didn't mind his piece. And the piece was basically empathising with young people. And I thought, oh, yeah, yeah. It's amazing, isn't it, how you can say, oh, he's actually not that bad when he says stuff that I agree with. But I also got, there was one review of the show which was complimentary about me. But it also said that I was sort of being left-wing somehow by sticking up for young people. I found that a bit weird because if you look at the commentary on COVID and young people's experience of it, it's mainly been right-wing commentators that have been pointing out the unfairness of it. It's been people on the left, hasn't it, that have been, shut the schools, put the kids in masks, inject fucking seven-year-olds. They just, all of their intergenerational unfairness stuff goes out of the window. Shut the nightclubs, have a 10 p.m. curfew. So I found that odd. I don't think that highlighting young people's disproportionately negative experience of COVID is in any way like a left-wing position. Look at me, I'm not left-wing. God, how dare you? I'm so upset about being called left-wing. Hey, guys, maybe I'm non-binary these days. Maybe we all are in some ways. And the fuck you is to people tweeting that I'm not funny. So, like, any comic, if you're in this game and you do the odd bit of telly, what you'll have is people going, he's just deeply unfunny. They try to find, like, the words that... Because sometimes we do read them, but they hate you, basically, because comedy produces this weirdly visceral reaction in people. And it's the same with me, and, you know, Nish gets loads of it as well. I mean, look, everyone's got their own opinion on comics, but I think it's a bit weird when you get that upset about a person that's just doing jokes and opinions. You know what I mean? I do find it odd, and it happens to comedians on the left and right, and people tweet that you're not funny. And that's the weirdest insult to go at, really, because the one thing that a comedian does think is that we're funny, all right? That is the thing that we fought since we were kids. You can't persuade us that we're not funny. You know, we're all sitting there thinking we should have our own show. You'd have to think that you were quite funny to have that level of arrogance. But I think what they think is that they can move the dial, right? In their minds, I think this is to people who are activists or trolls from the left and right. I think that they think that commissioners are watching Twitter and they're just waiting for that kind of tweet that will change their mind. And they'll be thinking, well, you know, I was at the record, Jeff seemed to do well, and he got lots of good laughs. And, you know, you can even see it in the edit. You can see him pausing for laughs. That should be evidence that people laugh. But hang on. Chloe FBPE, hashtag rejoin EU, hashtag Boris the Butcher, has said that Jeff Norcott is deeply unfunny and unpleasant. Well, I'll tell you what, let's get him off our screens now. Crack on with the show. First up, we're going to be talking about the Tory national insurance rise. I don't know why I said that in such a jolly fucking way. That was weird. Okay, let's do a little recap here. So the Tories are introducing a 1.25% national insurance social care levy. They've given it some funky name, haven't they? And first, straight out of the gate here. And so this is to fill the black hole in social care funding, right? Ostensibly, that's the idea. Now, first up, this is an area that a lot of people would be happy to see addressed. I mean, there are a lot of families dealing with dementia and the implications of social care because we've got a very fucking old population, haven't we? I mean, we're very, very old, you know? This is one of the things about the NHS, guys. It's great at making people live longer, but it also costs money too. Am I going to get in trouble for that? Maybe. The idea that the government are trying to do something will play out pretty well, I suspect. That's my what most people think straight out of the gate, is I think that this has been pitched in a way. And Boris, he's got that weird thing sometimes where he can seem quite sincere at the dispatch box, and you go, does he have human emotions? Does he actually give a fuck about anyone other than himself? There was a flicker of it. I don't know. I've been fooled before. But the question is it going to be enough, right? Is this money actually... The idea, I mean, I'm not against... I'm not in favour of tax rises generally, but I suspect that... Well, as they say in the game, you know, if you can't put them up after a pandemic, when can you? Hey, lads. But at this point in time, extra money for social care, I'm not against that. But there's two big issues, right? Is one, is it going to go to that directly, yeah? Or is it going to go into the giant black hole that is the NHS? It is like a black hole, isn't it? Gorging on celestial energy in the form of money and getting bigger. And don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking the NHS, our dear beloved NHS, full of plucky volunteers that do it for a laugh and, you know, out of the goodness of their hearts. But what I'm saying is it's a huge administrative body. I think the principle of free healthcare is a beautiful thing, but the NHS is a means of delivering that, right? Frontline doctors, A&E, nurses, got nothing but love for them. But then there's a lot of other people there, you know, pen pushers, procurement officers. That's the fear, isn't it? Will the money, if this money definitely... means that people can get places in care homes and not have to fucking spend every bit of money that they've saved their whole life, then fair play. But was it a fair way to do it? I mean, one implication of doing it via national insurance is that it seems to, for the time being, exclude wealthy pensioners, right? You know that generation that are going to be the ones that are principally going to benefit from this. And there's always that argument, and I've had this with the boomers, there's me trying to get inside with the kids, is that what they'll say is, we paid him for it. We paid in for it. We paid in our national insurance stamp. I mean, maybe one of the implications is they actually, because wages used to be a physical thing, right? So they maybe psychologically it's burned into their mind that they actually handed back a bit of fucking shillings or fucking groats or whatever it was back in the day. So there we paid in for it. And fair enough. But I would say that so are we. We are paying in for it now. And I will guarantee that over time we'll be taking out a lot less because it will just be reduced. The pension will get less. Care will be reduced, all right? So I'm not sure that we paid in for it. It's really the home run argument that they seem to think. And would income tax have been fairer? Because then it includes wealthy pensioners. I mean, I saw a stat in The Spectator the other day. And just like people of pensionable age are now wealthier per head of household than people that are working between the ages of 45 and 54. They're wealthier. They've got more fucking money. I mean, this is one thing about this generation. I used to do a bit on it, you know, where they used to say, oh, you don't know, you're born. We had it tougher in our day. And I used to say, well, yeah, but you've done all right since then, haven't you? You know, you ate all the cod in the North Sea, bought your council house for £7. It's been tricky for Labour to respond to this, right? Starmer seemed a bit muddled at the dispatch box. He was throwing at the Tories that they can no longer claim to be the party of low taxation. You go, okay, but what's your point there, Keir? Is that, are you now saying that the Tories are definitely a party who put up taxation to pay for public services, right? But isn't that supposed to be your bag, mate? I mean, I'm not sure you thought this one through. Aha, look at them, right? Yeah, you can count on them to put up taxes to pay for stuff. All right, then what's the point of Labour? And then they were saying, well, they broke a manifesto promise. I would say, again, another what most people think is that I don't think families looking for a bit of social care and a bit of certainty in their loved ones' old ages are going to be going, but, Jesus, it was a manifesto pledge, are they? They're going, yeah, look, it would be great if we don't have to dip into all their savings, but quick, get me that weird brochure thing that comes around at election time that no fucker ever reads. I mean, what is Labour's point? I don't understand is that you were, after a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic that created like a gigantic gouge in the public purse, that you shouldn't slightly change tack? That would be fucking irresponsible. Yeah, oh, you said it in the manifesto. We said a lot of stuff in 2019, didn't we? Do you know what I mean? We said a lot of stuff. We said, I'll never do fucking star jumps in front of my telly, but I did it, didn't I, old Joe Wicks? And it's tricky for the It's tricky for the right as well, because do you remember the 2019 general election? The left repeatedly reassured us how these Tories were heartless bastards. And I bought into it. I was like, good, that's what I want in power. Now, look at them, spending money, introducing new taxes for social care. I'm going to do the Tories under the Trade Descriptions Act, because they remind me of the Gordon Brown years, right? We were told that Boris was going to be a dictator. I think he's like Gordon Brown. He looks a bit harassed. He looks a bit stressed out by the job. He's governing by focus group, essentially. I mean, Gordon did a little raid on the national insurance, didn't he? I just find national insurance is a really fucking sneaky way of making money, because the idea that it will be separated out when it all goes into treasury coffers, like Rishi's got loads of little piggy banks in his... You know what, actually, Rishi Sunak, he's so young and funky, he's probably the only chance that could possibly have giant funky piggy banks in his office. I just don't buy it. But the problem again is that, you know, I'm not entirely sure if this is going to be enough money. I'm not entirely sure about the ethics of the way that it's being raised by the Conservatives. But equally, they are doing something. And one of the problems with Labour is they might criticise from the other side of the chamber. But when the Tories did try and put a tax on wealthy pensioners, they called it the granny tax, right? When Theresa May tried to do something to address social care, they called it the dementia tax. So the main thing that Labour seem is annoyed that it's something that they're not doing. Okay, quick hype here. I want to give a massive big up. I shouldn't be saying words like big up, should I? Well, that is quite a 90s word, isn't it? I want to give a massive hype to a tour show that I'm doing in Southport. I'm doing the Southport Festival. I went up there before. We sold out the room. This was added a bit later, so we're still getting going with ticket sales, but it's got some decent numbers on the board. It would be good to see as many people as possible. It's run by some brilliant people up there. It's the Southport Comedy Festival. That's Wednesday, the 13th of October. Love to see you there. I'm also going to Northampton. Northampton's another one of these ones that I spoke about with both Fern Brady and Tom Walker, where people say, come, why don't you ever come to Northampton? I'm going to Northampton, and you lot need to pull your fucking finger out. Otherwise, like a lot of people that have been to Northampton, I will conclude that I'll never go back to Northampton. I'm laying down the gauntlet here. All the others are selling well. Bedford, they've increased the capacity of Bedford. So just remember, if you tried to buy tickets before Saturday, September the 18th, next Saturday in Bedford, Colchester Arts Centre, 19th. You know I'll never do any advertising on this podcast. Sunday the 19th of September in Colchester. I think we're down. It's a 300 capacity. I think we're up to like 270 there. So if you're fancying coming to that, the following Wednesday, the 22nd, Peterborough, the Key Theatre. Day after that is sold out. Leamington Spa now, I think on the Friday, might be sold out. Monmouth on Saturday the 25th. That's another one where the capacity has increased, so get involved there. And just regarding the book, it had a little bump. We all have a little bump, don't we? By the way, yeah, this Friday as well, but this podcast will probably go up Thursday, which is tomorrow. I'm in Barnstable on Friday. There's a decent number of tickets left for that, because evidently Barnstable just too busy fucking doing incest. I mean, I didn't even make that into a joke, did I? It was just a heinous regional stereotype. And then Exeter. We got a lot of people in the room. I think it's over 350 now, but it's a big room. And there's still room for a few more. And just regarding the book, it had a bump recently. If you haven't bought the book, it's available on audiobook. I think you can get it as your free credit for the month. It's available on Kindle and on Kindle. I don't know why I said that with such fucking emphasis. And hardback. And I will be signing this week, at this week's gigs, I'll be signing hardback copies of the book after the gig, as long as the venue let me. And then from next week onwards, I should be selling them as well. So, and if you have bought the book, any reviews, I mean, the Amazon reviews, if you've got an Amazon account, that all helps with the star rating and all that stuff. So there you go. I do not have advertising on this podcast. It's your mind. You're imagining that I'm advertising myself instead. God, listen to yourself. Going to do a bit that's coming from the glorious world of cancel culture here. So there's a footballer called Mark Bowler, right? He's a Middlesbrough player. I don't even know, because I support AFC Wimbledon. I'm all about League One. If it's not happening in League One, I don't give a shit. So I don't know what league Middlesbrough are in. What are they in? Fucking, I don't know, Championship probably. And he was censured. That's a tabloid word, isn't it? No one ever uses that in real life. He was censured by the FA for a tweet that he did in 2012, I think, when he was 14. 14, that had homophobic overtones, undertones, intonations. I don't know. Look, if it was homophobic, not good. However, 14. I mean, if you're going to judge anybody's actions in society at any point, I would argue that 14-year-old boy is the worst time. It's the worst gender. It's the worst age. I mean, like anyone listening to this, if you had a transcript of the stuff that I said in GCSE science, I'd never work again. They'd even take away my two Ds that I got at GCSE science. That's not the man I've become. I mean, for God's sake, it's the worst age, 14-year-old, isn't it? You're sitting there in a cloud of Lynx Africa, wanking yourself into a fucking oblivion every night. And just trying to impress other boys around you, saying stupid shit. And also, Twitter then. I say this often, and I'll say it again. We did not know what it was then. We thought Twitter was like a fucking public WhatsApp group between our mates, didn't we? We were all having these conversations in public. We didn't know. We said, you always say things to your friends that are pushing the envelope, aren't they? It's a way of expressing trust, isn't it? It's a way of expressing trust that I can take a liberty here, but we can do that because we're friends and we know that we're good people and we don't have hate in our hearts. But this lad, Mark Butler, what must he think, right? Obviously, he's got to come out and say some pre-prepared shit by his agent going, I regret my actions, in some weird kind of Minority Report historical way where he has to account for himself as a 14-year-old. I mean, I'm not even sure that British law allows for the naming of 14-year-olds in court cases, but the FA, in their wisdom... You notice how often that phrase goes together. The FA in their wisdom. The FA in their wisdom have made it public. I'm not even sure they're allowed to do that. Are there any lawyers? What most people think, uk@gmail.com. What legal basis have they got? Did he have some contract with Middlesbrough at that point? And if so, is that not child labour? Are kids allowed to sign contracts that are so detailed about their private lives? A bit fucking creepy if you ask me. And the question with all these things is that they always seem so daft, don't they? You know, I mean, it's great grist to the mill for the right-wing press. The balmy, the loopy, PC gone mad. And as we all know, in the 90s, they used to say it was PC gone mad for stuff that was practically made up, you know, about bar, black sheep, and that you can't say black sheep anymore. And now there is stuff happening that is like that, right? And you think, well, where is it coming from? Who's driving this? And it's probably coming from someone in the FA, right? There's someone in the board that's got responsibility for diversity and inclusion. I mean, can we just stop and say what a fucking gravy train that is? Diversity and inclusion. I don't know if you saw that screen grab of all the different positions in the NHS that are up for grabs. 70 grand a year, some of them, to be a diversity and inclusion officer. What a great job that is. Just sit there and every time they do a photo of a workshop or a board meeting, you go, yeah, too many blokes. Yeah, too many crackers in there, too many white people. Okay, I'm logging out for the day. What most people think. But these people have got to do something, right? It's got to be, I think, one of those jobs where you have to create work for yourself, isn't it? Like, your job is to fight prejudice and bigotry and to make sure that workforces are as diverse and inclusive as possible. But what that also means is that there's often nothing happening in that respect. That's not a day in, day out thing. I mean, you can always put on workshops. I mean, there are always workshops about fucking gender identity or whatever. Up and down the country, there are decent people spending half a day of their life staring at their colleagues going, why are we sitting in this shit? In fact, I'd really like to know about that. If you are a liberal person but have found yourself in a workshop that was absolutely unnecessary, telling you not to be a hateful bastard, then please email confidentiality assured at whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. But so you get this person at the FA and then something lands on their desk, right? Someone has maybe got a vendetta against this guy. You'd have to think that to sort of dox Mark Bowler, who no one knows who the fuck he is, and find from a tweet from when he's 14, there's got to be a reason. There's got to be somebody digging this up. And so their fear is, oh, well, it's on my desk. I have to do something. It's like the government at the moment. Everybody always thinks, well, we'll have to do something. So it must be what they're worried about is that if they say, well, you know, I mean, they can't say this. If they say like, well, boys will be boys. It was 14. It was 2012. Very different time. Maybe they can't say that. But if they try and show a bit of perspective about it, what they're worried is that at some point their name is going to be on Twitter. Right? Why do you know, if their name's like Mark Burrows or something like that, Mark Burrows, why don't you care about hate crimes? You know, so that's their fear. And they worry about like the fucking 100 or so people that might do that. But what it ends up is in perpetrating an action which seems absolutely insane to the vast majority of people. And I think of all the gay men that I know, and I know quite a few. bit of a scene queen back in my day, well into the old gay clubbing I was. Because basically, once I start, I love clubbing, I love house music. And I know there's, if there's young people listening to this, they'll probably cringe now. But it was our music too, lads. We showed you the way, you know, with the old illegal raves. But I used to love, you know, going out into gay clubs because gigs, I would start gigging every Friday, Saturday night, but I wouldn't be finished till 11. And then I'd be on my way back into London, 12:30. I'd ring the lads. They were like, we're just getting up. We're just getting up, darling. Genuinely. And then so I'd go around there and I'd still be able to have a social life. But so I end up where, I don't want to out liberal liberals listening, but my son's godparents are two married gay men. So I don't know whether, I win. I just out liberaled you. And the reason I'm mentioning all of this, one is because I'm basically virtue signaling. But the other is that I couldn't think of a single gay man I know that would want this to happen, that would see any logic in this. Who does it help? Gay people, society, or some board member trying to justify their salary or cover their ass? I think we know what it is. And it is a very strange situation, just to finish, is that we're holding children accountable, like historic children accountable for tweets. I mean, the very word tweet implies that it's a frivolous piece of nonsense that you toss out into the ether, right? We're holding them accountable for that. But equally, we're sort of expecting them, with vaccinations, to do something that they don't really need to do to protect everybody else. So you can make an argument for both these things, but what you can't have is the paradox that's currently occurring where children are being held accountable for some very grown-up stuff, but also not being given the liberties that are accordant with them being teenagers and becoming young adults. Young adults. Why did I say that? Young adults. Okay, just do a bit about the old mental health here. I always have to call it the old mental health. I've had a rough one the last few weeks, mate. I'll explain why. Is that I have a complaint of the inner ear, which flares up sometimes when I've been busy or stressed or whining. You know, I already know that there's some women listening to this going, yeah, okay, man flu. But it flares up, and the inner ear basically, I don't want to tell you the name because I know all the blokey blokes listening will be like, will take the piss, but it's called meniere's. Meniere's disease. Millionaire's disease, is it, Jeff? Yeah, sadly not. And what it does, it creates like tinnitus is one of the main things. So it sort of sounds like, you know, a TV in the 80s, just before it was about to blow up. That that noise, like a fucking jumbo jet taking off. And then nausea and sort of vertigo, and your ears feel like they're closing up all the time. And it, you know, for a stand-up comedian, vertigo and tinnitus, it's not a very useful thing. And it creates this fear, right? This fear you feel like you're going to fall. And I sort of thought, God, imagine if I fell over on stage. And then I realised that it would probably get a laugh, wouldn't it? I mean, there'd probably be quite a few people in the audience that would enjoy that. So it's something that I'm having to manage. And at first, I sort of rolled with it. But you know these things, when they go on, they grind you down a bit. And it has done my Sweden a little bit, just the longer it's gone. And I don't know if you've got any shit going on with you, physical stuff. I mean, Jesus, my mates and on our WhatsApp group now, it is kind of like embarrassing bodies. Have you found that, where you just started talking about your ailments? And you've realised that I think that individually, we all don't give a shit about each other's ailments, but we want to be able to talk about ours. So it's sort of like a deal that you come to where it's a safe space to discuss it. But yeah, what it has meant is that my resting level of anxiety has gone up, because you stand up, you feel dizzy, or you have a nauseous moment on stage, or you know, any little situations where it happens, and then your brain kind of marks all those and goes, danger, 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 getting out of the bath, danger, right? And you have to really battle with that. Everything seems like a potential pitfall. I sound very jolly at the moment. I mean, it's happened to me before, but I'm just having to work my way through it. The other day I was going in a shop to get a milkshake, and it was a bit busy in there. And I walked in and went, this looks a bit tense. I was like, what is tense, Jeff? You're going to get a milkshake. You know what I mean? The only danger here is the fact that the milkshake's got 600 calories, and you'll probably walk out of type 2 diabetes. Sorry to the type 2 diabetes community, you know, blah, 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 blah. I think you got to challenge your thoughts, right? You got to challenge your thoughts. That's the thing. One thing that a counsellor said to me a while ago is that, there's two things actually. This is a useful strategy that I don't think I've mentioned before. It's the paradox of acceptance, right? So when all these things are happening, I'm currently having a big fight within me of like, I don't want it to happen, I'm going to fight against it. Actually, a more healthy way of dealing with it is to go, yeah, this is happening and it's shit. And it's something I've got to work with, you know, to be more placid about it. Because the fight against it, or going, why isn't it stopping? Why is it still happening? Is also expending mental energy. And the other thing is just challenging your thoughts, because your thoughts aren't what you are. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're just a habit that you get into, and you have to, it's a tedious process, but you have to go, and it does sound fucking mental itself, but you have to log your thoughts. So if you're sort of thinking to yourself, oh, that looks a bit tense going in that crowded pub, you have to go, there is tension about going in the pub. You have to become like a shit narrator to your own life. You go like, I'm sitting opposite someone on a stool, I feel a bit dizzy. There are concerns about vertigo sitting on a stool. I don't know, maybe... Maybe it's sort of the process is exchanging one form of madness for another. But the reason I bring up this and all this is, one, to have a good old moan, but also it's worth discussing anxiety, because I've always thought anxiety is a tricky one for men in particular, right? Depression, I've known a lot of men that have been solidly depressed for 30 years. They just get on with it. They're moany, they're crabby, they just get on with it. Depressed, yeah, pretty bad. Well, life's not supposed to be happy, is it? You know what I mean? Just get on, you get married, you die. But anxiety is a tricky one for men, because you risk a loss of control, you risk a loss of your dignity, do you know what I mean, your status. It all plays into sort of old-fashioned stuff that is important to men. This is the difference with me when I talk about mental health. I'm not just going to dismiss these things. They matter to us. It's about our pride, right? And if a woman, you know, if a woman has a dizzy spell, say she's at a shopping centre, you know what I mean? You go to one of these shopping centres and it's fucking mental there. Do you know what I mean? You're getting in Primark and people are rugby tackling each other for a pashmina. And you know, but then a woman comes out and she's like, I just need to sit down for a minute. I feel a bit faint. And everyone will rally around a woman, won't they? Oh yeah, sure. Do you want a water? Do you want a water, Mandy? Do you want a water? If you're with a group of blokes, right, you fight that feeling so much as you're going around there. I think this is why so many men faint on those You Been Framed videos at weddings, because the whole day has been building up. They're probably hungover, so they probably haven't helped themselves, have they? And they probably had a couple of pints, and they start to feel a bit dehydrated, they feel a bit hot, but they don't feel like they can put their hand up. And you know what I mean? Because, you think about that pressure, they're in front of the whole family. It just, look, I don't care how progressive you are. If in that situation, a bloke puts his hand up and goes, I'm sorry, can I sit down? I feel a bit faint. People would challenge the marriage. I know of a reason why she should not marry this man. He's weak. So that is what we battle with. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that is how it is. That's why male anxiety is, I think, a different beast. So if you're feeling anxious, and let's be honest, post-lockdown, a lot of people have found situations they used to find manageable before. Just kind of go, it's a thought process, isn't it? It's my mind throwing up stuff. This is what all the shitty meditations say. You can thank your brain for the thought. I mean, that is mental, isn't it? You're out and about thanking your brain. Ah, thank you, brain. The worst thing is if you mistakenly say some of this shit out loud. You know, you're just paying for a milkshake and you go, thank you, brain, for this thought. And then the person like looks at you and go, what the fuck? Do you know what I mean? Is this guy gonna pull out a gun? Okay, so letters. It's your letters. Oh, I just thought of that. That's a new thing. It's never been done before. And thank you to all the people that contacted me on the Parenting Health thing. I did have a few letters. I've tried to respond to all of them. Just one following up on a theme from a couple of episodes ago, which was I was saying about how men don't build things anymore and it's a fucking disgrace. And I got an email from Rob, who built an outside toilet that he's very proud of. Now, Rob, I think you should be proud and well done. I'm going to challenge the idea that you can legitimately call this an outside toilet, okay? I mean, I can't show you the photo, guys, but it is two pieces of wood. I mean, he's got a bog roll holder on it, and he's got a yellow bucket. And you can have it while you're camping. I mean, what I love about the idea of this, Rob, is when you're telling your missus, babe, I'm going to build us an outside toilet for the camping in a couple of weeks. And she's probably going, oh, yeah, outside toilet. That sounds nice, doesn't it? That sounds nice. And then when she's seen what you've put together there, Rob, like I say, I respect the job that you've done. I couldn't build it, but I think that your mind has maybe... So look, all I'll say, Rob, is I was out in Afghanistan I don't like to bring it up, the work that I did for the troops out there. You know, just risking life and limb to tell knob gags to repel the Taliban. Turns out it was in vain, you know. I just hope that the new regime in Afghanistan will allow knob gags here and there. Because, you know, they're pretty easy going about stuff generally. But yeah, I would say that there was a very much a war zone feel about that toilet. Can I tell you a quick story? I was at a forward base in Afghanistan. I think it was called Pimon or something. It was quite, you know, it was quite in the thick of it sort of thing. And it was so hot. It was like, I mean, I think I do add a couple of Celsius to this every time I tell the story, but it was in the high 40s, right? Mid 40s. It's still fucking hot. And they said, do you want to have a go in our swimming pool? And I was like, fuck yeah. And the swimming pool was a barrel full of water. And I got in it and it was great to be cold. But then one of the soldiers said to me, oh yeah, do you know what we call that? Squaddy soup. I was like, why is that? He goes, well, because of all the disgusting squaddies that have been in it across the day. And do you know what? It's so hot, I stayed in there. Okay, as ever, at the end of the show, I read out the 5-star reviews from iTunes. So if you leave a 5-star review on iTunes, I will read it out, or at least I'll paraphrase it if it's a bit on the long side. On that note, Fentiger, who said, all I'm saying is give Jeff a chance. Listen to all his podcasts to date. Yes, and I bought and read his book twice. Thank you very much for that. You're a real friend. If you want to be a friend, be like Fentiger. And whether he is alone at the crease, in partnership with a big hitter, or with somebody relatively new to the game, he always puts in a strong performance and holds his own while keeping the swear rate ticking over. There you go. And you've done some cricket metaphors in that. I'm much obliged to you, mate. This is from Matt Davis. That was a couple of weeks ago. This is what also happens as well, fans, is that, fans? I sound like fucking Roland Rat then. Is that, yeah, there was just one review there. I mean, that was kind of embarrassing for me, all my new listeners, and I was just, I was proceeding there like I had loads to cover. I was like, all right, let's rattle through this. Because there was only one. But look, if you're a long-time listener, always thank you to the patrons who keep this weekly and ad-free. But and whether you're new to the show, thanks very much for being part of this. It'd be great to hear from you, and I'll hear you next week. I fucked up the ending last week, didn't I? Fuck it. Next week, show, program, thing.